Tired of trying diet after diet without results? Mochi Health offers a long-term weight loss solution personalized to your needs. Our board-certified obesity doctors and registered dietitians provide expert guidance to help you succeed. Eligible patients can access custom-formulated GLP-1 medication at an affordable set price delivered monthly. Take our free quiz at joinmochi.com and use code AUDIO40 for $40 off your first month. That's joinmochi.com. We all know that owning a small business means you wear many hats, but sometimes you really need an extra pair of hands. Upwork is how good companies find great and trusted freelance talent. With more than 2 decades of experience, with the simple and ambitious goal of pioneering a better way of working, companies at every stage turn to Upwork to get things done and find more flexibility in staffing key projects and initiatives. They access a global marketplace filled with top talent in IT, web dev, marketing, and more. Posting a job on Upwork is easy. With no cost to join, you can register, browse freelancer profiles, and get help drafting a job post or even book a consultation. From there, you connect with freelancers that get you and can easily hire them and take your business to the next level. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to post your job for free and connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com, Upwork.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome into the Sports Grid Fantasy Football Podcast. My name is Davis Maddock. I am joined today by one Mr. Grant Barfield of Fantasy Points. We are going to do some rookie draft chatter. We're going to really just kind of key in on some of the decisions that you have to make. You know, instead of the paint by numbers, there are some picks that make themselves. And we actually participated in a rookie draft in the Scott Barrett Invitational League that does its rookie draft before the NFL draft, and that is how we are going to enter into this conversation. Graham, how is rookie draft season treating you?
Good, man. It's good, man. It's always good to catch up with you, and it's a fun season. Just a ton of drafts going on Sleeper and FFPC, and obviously everything going on Underdog. So it's full draft season here, and I don't know about you, man. I always love this time of year, just getting the season ready, getting Underdog ranks ready. It's definitely one of my favorite times of year. So, yeah, excited to chop it up, man. We were just talking a little bit before. The first two rounds of our draft actually don't look horrible. I was expecting it to be a lot worse, but actually the first two rounds, we did pretty well.
So doing this exercise, as we have done, we've been in the, I believe we've been doing this league since 2018 or 2019. There's been some pretty hysterical examples of misses. Malik Willis as the 101 the year that he got drafted. Hakeem Butler was I believe the 104 the year he ended up being a fourth round pick. So there are definitely examples of this where the tea leaves get read incorrectly. We do the draft almost immediately after the scouting combine and before the NFL draft. I suppose probably the most interesting decision you have to make, though, is the one that that our friend Matthew Berry had to make, and you're sitting there at 2. He ended up taking Marvin Harrison Jr. with the 101 instead of Caleb Williams. To be honest, I mean, I get it. I really do get it both ways. I don't think there is a correct answer. I only had the 101 in one league this year, and I actually traded back to the 102, got a future pick, and just was fine taking whoever was there.
Yeah, I'm in a similar situation in another league. I have the 101 because my team is awful, and I'm thinking about trying to move back to the 102 because I think the guy that's picking behind me will probably want Harrison. If you look at Barry's team, though, he's got Mahomes and Brock Purdy. So, you know, for him, you know, maybe the, you know, MHJ is just, you know, that big of a needle mover for him. I think it really does just like kind of come down to your roster construction. Like if you have no quarterbacks, which I have a team that has no quarterbacks and I have the 101 and I think I'm just going to stick. Take Caleb Williams, but I'm with you. I think it really just kind of comes down to, you know, what your team looks like. And there really probably isn't a wrong answer. I think Harrison is definitely the safer of the two. I mean, our guy, Thomas Tipple over here at Fantasy Points, he has a saying that, you know, only God can scout quarterbacks. And there's just some truth to that. Caleb Williams is probably more of like 55-45 as opposed to 50-50 as most quarterbacks. But yeah, man, MSG is just the truth. And, you know, I won't debate you if you have him at 1 and you still need a quarterback too.
And it's sort of a matter of like your league too. Like if your league is not a super active trading league, then a guy holding his value probably matters a little bit less. So Caleb, I think could probably have a pretty bad rookie year, relatively speaking. You know, let's say 19 touchdowns, 11 interceptions, 6.5 YPA, and he'll probably either go up in value or hold steady. I mean, we've seen this with Trevor Lawrence. Pat Corain has the example that Trey Lance in startup value. If you look at the tools at Dynasty League Football that tracks the ADP, he actually went higher in startup ADP after year one, which is just like, you know, it's completely insane, but that's just how the market deals with these guys. But if you're not in a super active league, if it's, you know, there's maybe four really active managers and six guys who kind of check in and two guys who you never hear from, then maybe you take Marvin Harrison Jr. I also think Harrison Jr. has a much easier path to being a truly elite fantasy scorer. Yeah. Because he could totally, if you told me he was in the Jefferson, Chase, Lamb tier of players next year, I'd totally buy it. I don't think Caleb can score. I mean, I know he can't score with Allen or Hurts right now. Like, just no chance.
Yeah, there's no chance. And you're right. I mean, I put out a tweet. I think we'll probably be drafting. I said late first. It'll probably be mid first for MHJ next year. Like,
yeah,
I think that's where he'll be. You know, Jamar Chase just isn't slipping out of like that 1.5, 1.6, and Justin Jefferson's going in that pocket this year. I think Harrison will probably be going after those guys next year. That's where we're going to be drafting him from. And I don't know how you feel about Kyler going into this year. I think it's just like a massive, massive. I know we're talking rookies, but I think it's a huge,
no, huge buy
value. Oh my God. Like, he had no receivers last year. Like, nobody could separate on the outside, and he was still okay. Like, solid QB2, like the floor was still there coming off the ACL. But now, you know, he's 18 months removed from surgery. He's got, you know, freak blue chip prospect and Marv Harrison. And man, I think these two are going to go off. Like, really want to buy Kyler.
And you can get Kyler. So I actually have this really awful team where I like didn't hit like every bad first round rookie for the last 3 years I have in this league. Like, it's got Quentin Johnson. It's got, it's, you know, Sky Moore is on this team. Like, just a really bad team. And I decided to just be done with it this offseason. I sold everything that was not nailed down. These are 30-man best ball rosters. I got down to 8 active players on my roster heading into this rookie draft. And wow. I sold Kyler for 2 firsts, a second, and like some ancillary young shitty player. And I mean, that's for a quarterback who could like very easily score 23, 24 points per game. You just don't, like, guys like that, like first round startup guys are just generally not available in Dynasty. Like, you're never really able to get Mahomes. You're never really able to get Josh Allen. You're never really able to get Lamar or Jefferson or Chase. So I would advise sending out some of those offers. It was a little bit easier to do last offseason when he literally was not playing, but I still think there's a window now.
Yep. Yeah, I'm with you. He's still a little bit undervalued, and you know, it's a good pairing with Harrison too. I think Kyler has been completely bashed too far as a passer. I don't, you know, he's never going to be Patrick Mahomes. Obviously, he's never going to be Kirk Cousins in terms of his accuracy. But you know, year over year in our fantasy points data stuff, like his accuracy, his catchable throw rate, like always looks pretty good.
So pick three. I am a Neighbors over Daniels guy. I mean, I think Daniels, like I think he's a good player. I mean, the concerns about him are well noted. It looks like he's getting in a skiing accident every time he gets tackled. I don't love that. You know, getting flashbacks of a Washington mobile quarterback who does not look great every time he gets tackled. And he's older. You know, he's 23. Same concerns I have for Bo Nix in terms of like ceiling. Like, I don't know how much better Jaden Daniels can get in terms of like accuracy and decision making and everything. And Neighbors, it's not a great situation, but also I feel like it's not a great situation in terms of efficiency. But if he's really good, this dude could earn like 160. Like, he could have Puka Nacua target volume from like week one, like from the jump.
He could, you know, Daniel Jones stinks. Obviously, there's that, you know, major downside. But for Dynasty, man, like, you know, the Giants are most likely going to be moving on from Dimes this offseason. By the way, we can't call him Dimes. We got to call him Pennies or something.
Correct.
I can't
Nichols.
Do that anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Nichols. Yeah. There you go. Yeah, much better. It comes down to your roster. Like, Jaden Daniels' upside is so clear, like, as a runner, like, you know, just holy shit upside. You know, Lamar Jackson 2019 is like the ceiling pinnacle for rushing seasons for quarterbacks. And, you know, Jaden Daniels, I don't know if he has that type of upside, but man, it's like kind of close. You know, the downside is very real with him. Yeah. Yeah. The downside is very real with him. And I'm like you, I'm trying to build around receivers and dynasty anyway. So I'm with you. I have Neighbors at three, or Neighbors at four. Actually, I have Daniels at three, then Neighbors, Odunze, at four. But yeah, man, Neighbors real quick this season. I mean, he could get 160 targets, like you said, and
yeah,
not a ton of them be catchable and not a ton of touchdown upside. But like, you know, if we're talking about Malik Neighbors catching 80 balls for, 1,100 yards and, only 4 or 5 touchdowns in his rookie year, like, we're going to count that as a win with Daniel Jones.
A huge win. I mean, if he can grind out 13.8 PPR points per game, even on insane volume with Daniel Jones, I think you're viewing it as a pretty big win.
No doubt, man. No doubt. And, if you look back, we obviously haven't had a ton of receivers taken in the first, top 10 picks, but generally speaking, like, those guys just are so productive, so quick. It's not just talent, it's opportunity, and these coaches trying to get them the ball. And the Giants obviously don't have a whole lot of receivers. I mean, it's Wandale and Darius Slayton and Jalen Hyatt. Like, none of those guys are really commanding the ball. So, target share should be really good.
I'm worried about my boy Wandale. Yeah. Because their best receiving configuration would have both those guys out there, but Neighbors was most effective as a slot wide receiver at LSU. So I think it's going to be a lot of Hyatt and Slayton.
Well, that's what I was about to ask you. So, like, if you look at, Harrison, you look at even like Ladd McConkey, like, most of those guys did most of their work outside, and Neighbors was in the slot like 40% of the time. Like, how do you account for that?
I mean, it would have been something that, like, 5 years ago I would have said, well, that's bad. I mean, you don't want that. But the NFL meta has changed so much. I mean, we really saw this with CeeDee Lamb, like, the first 2 years of his career. Like, he was not able to consistently win outside, but he was able to score you enough points. Like, he was a meaningful fantasy contributor getting the easy stuff from the slot. And where you get super elite fantasy production, we see this a lot with Jefferson now, is you get your 4 for 64 out of the slot, just those easy catches.
Yeah.
But then you also get 2 to 3 high value, high depth of target end zone throws a game. That's like the real secret sauce. So all the best wide receivers now, Garrett Wilson, Jefferson, Chase, Lamb, all of these guys do that, where they play some in the slot and they're also getting the vertical stuff that you need. And I think Neighbors can do that.
Yeah. Well, I mean, Neighbors is one of the rare breeds who can do both. I'm with you on that. I was just curious if there's, like, obviously Justin Jefferson kind of retrained our brains on that. I was just curious if you had like a thought with Neighbors. It's also just the way LSU played, right? Like, they just had so many guys, had so many guys, and like, why not put Malik Neighbors in the middle of the field and, have him running up the seam. So yeah, I get that.
My best guess is that they start the year with him playing outside, because Wandale is their most effective second, like, true other slot than Neighbors. Yeah, he's the most effective guy there. He's proven he can play that at the NFL level. I mean, obviously I'm bag defending a little bit because I have Wandale in like all these leagues, but his targets per route run in his career is like insane, which is, to me, is evidence that he can get open in a way that Hyatt and these other guys cannot. Let's go to the end of the first round now. So this is where you start. I think at 109 is where you have to start making decisions. You've got Worthy, Brian Thomas Jr., Ladd McConkey, Keon Coleman, and I mean, I guess you could put Nix in that conversation too if you want. I am a Worthy 109 guy. Thomas's ADP is there. I've seen Ladd go. I'm in one where Ladd went at 109.
Yep.
I don't think I'd do that, but I actually did take Ladd 110 in a league last night, and I think it's defensible.
All right, let me make the Ladd over Xavier argument, because I've seen it too, and I think it's really, really close. We're just talking about, Ladd, or we're just talking about slot receivers and, winning on the outside, but, like, McConkey obviously missed, 4 or 5 games last year with a back injury. We did play, though. He was, like, mainly an outside receiver. He's 79% outside. Obviously, elite yards per route run. Only trailed Neighbors, Harrison, and Franklin in the class in yards per route run. So, like, when he was on the field, he was dominating, absolutely dominating. And then, you read some of the quotes from, like, Harbaugh and the new GM, Hortitz. you know, they're basically saying like, we just view this guy as like an absolute versatile piece. Like, we think he's going to play outside, he's going to play Z, he's going to play in the slot. And like, ideally he has the frame for a slot receiver. And we were just talking about it. Like, you know, Justin Herbert, slot receiver, obviously Keenan Allen, Hall of Famer. Like, I'm not expecting by any means McConkey to come in, like, replace Keenan Allen. But that role is just like massive, you know, getting those 3-4 design targets in the middle of the field every single game is huge. And like, I get the Chargers are not going to be the same pass heavy team that they once were, but McConkey's path to earning targets like week one is very, very easy with, you know, Josh Palmer, who I don't think is the best separator. And obviously Quentin Johnson, who had just had one of the worst rookie seasons of all time. You know, Worthy to me is pretty risky, except he went for the nut spot. Yeah. You know, like, he went to Yeah, absolute perfect spot for him, though. Like, you could not have dialed up a better spot. Like, you know, maybe, you know, the drops and the ball tracking concerns aside, like, you know, he's going to be the new upgraded MVS in this offense, who's actually like kind of a good separator. So, you know, to me, the upside is insane with him, but I think McConkey's floor is a little higher. And I think he's, you know, just a really good prospect, underrated prospect, because the total production just obviously, that's the one thing with McConkey, the total production just wasn't totally there.
I mean, and he is also sort of the prototypical guy you would have expected to not have a real strong combine, where, yeah. and then you're just kind of having to like take the scout's word for it that he's really good, where it's like, well, he didn't play that much and he wasn't that athletic. But I mean, I'm just not going to have that many concerns about a guy who played for national, like, kind of the same lack of production concerns I have with A.D. Mitchell, where I'm like, just played on all these good teams. He played with other NFL players. I think it's hard for the stuff that we're looking at, you know, the market share analysis, it's just a little bit harder to suss out when you play for Alabama, when you play for Ohio State, when you play for Georgia, when you play for Texas. Like, it's just more difficult. I'm definitely Worthy over Ladd, because if Worthy hits, a Worthy hit is like he's the 19th pick in startup drafts next offseason or something. Yeah. Like, it's just like he's just immediately going all the way up. A Ladd hit is still really good. I mean, basically Keenan Allen, right? In that Chargers offense, he could catch 100 passes, like, if he is a full-time player. I don't know if the passing volume level will get there with Greg Roman, but there's no one on that offense getting in his way. Brian Thomas Jr. is the one that I find it harder to click, because Evan Ingram and Christian Kirk are going to get so many targets in year one. And I feel like Thomas will be in like a kind of valuable role as the deep threat, but I don't know how good Trevor Lawrence is at delivering those. And it's harder to get there with that level of expected volume.
I was watching some Calvin Ridley during free agency and just kind of rethinking about, you know, that offense last year. And
yeah.
And Ridley was getting open, man. Like, Lawrence was missing throws, and I get he dealt with like a slew of injuries last season, but there's a lot to prove. Lawrence has a lot to prove. Ridley definitely had some, you know, kind of focus drops and just some mental mistakes, but the separation was there from him, and Lawrence just wasn't delivering the ball. And, you know, role wise, I'm with you. I think Kirk and Ingram just eat this season. I'm all in on Travis Etienne this year, by the way. I think he's in for just like a monster role. And if this offense, even, you know, if Lawrence does take like another step forward, he's just going to, you know, Etienne will just be one of the main beneficiaries. But I'm with you on Kirk and Ingram. I think there's a chance that both those guys just see like 55% of the targets here. And we're talking about Brian Thomas getting like 18% of the looks, and Gabe getting his usual like 14%. You know, in best ball, I definitely see some upside for Thomas this year in like the 6th, 7th round for the spiked week potential, but I'm with you. I think the consistency probably won't be there, because Kirk and Ingram are just going to, you know, command so many targets. That's the one thing that Lawrence does, except I think really well, is throw over the middle. And, you know, the timing stuff to the outside and the deep throws just really haven't been there so far consistently in his career, but throwing over the middle and throwing to the slot, you know, Lawrence has been pretty strong.
All right, where are you targeting Bo Nix? So Bo Nix in this pre-draft rookie draft went at the 211. He's one of the biggest risers. His ADP now in these drafts is at the 112, ahead of Keon Coleman, ahead of A.D. Mitchell, ahead of Trey Benson, ahead of Jonathan Brooks. I get it. I do definitely get it. But what I guess the ceiling would be, he finds a way to rush for 8 touchdowns a year somehow, the way that he did in college. And I just don't know how duplicatable that is going to be.
Yeah, so I have Knicks behind those two backs, Benson and Brooks. I have them behind Keon, McConkie, Worthy, and Thomas. So he'd be, you know, 204, 205 for me. I think the landing spot is sneakishly like kind of good. Like obviously the weapons aren't great, but Sean Payton has been a really good coach for quarterbacks. Just generally speaking, I mean, Russell Wilson was not good last year, but he still finished 10th in fantasy points per dropback.
Right.
You know, so if Bo Nix is like, you know, he's a rookie, but he could still finish top 12 in, you know, efficiency on a dropback basis. And, you know, you look back even 2 years ago, I mean, that Saints passing offense and Payton's last year, they had like 3,500 passing yards and nearly 30 touchdowns with like Trevor Siemian and, you know, Jameis and Ian Book, like just dusty dudes. So, you know, I think Payton will know how to kind of accentuate Nix's strengths and kind of minimize his weaknesses. I'm with you though. The ceiling for me is the big question, and I'm chasing ceiling and, you know, this kind of like early second roundish range. And I just think the running backs have it, especially relative to this class. Like Benson and Brooks, I think are, you know, I like Jalen Wright and Marshawn Lloyd. I have them actually 3 and 4 and then Corum 5, but you know, Benson and Brooks just really kind of stand out to me as like, okay, they're going to have immediate opportunity plus long-term upside to be potential bell cows in their offense.
All right. Well, yeah, well, talk to me about Brooks, who was, yeah, you know, pretty much the running back one across the board coming in. And it's a real eye of the beholder situation in Carolina, in which if he's good, you know, Miles Sanders got benched for Chuba Hubbard last year. Hubbard was fine. You know, just like a very jaggy NFL running back, not a guy who is going to like steal touches away from a very competent starter. But the offensive line is like very whatever. Quarterback play, super suspect. They draft Xavier Leggett in the first round, but it's just like not an offense you anticipate scoring a ton of points, not an offense you anticipate having a lot of touchdown opportunities. You know, is Brooks, are the receiving chops strong enough to catch 50 passes as a rookie? You know, that's kind of how he would make his A.
Yeah, that's where I'm at with Brooks is, you know, even if he only scores 5-6 touchdowns as a rookie, I'm expecting him to be an every down player for this team. You know, the other thing is like he popped his ACL, but he had surgery December 1st. So he's going to be 9 months removed on August 1st. So he'll be pretty clear for training camp, which is great. But the main reason I'm buying Brooks is just the passing down ability. Obviously, he's a really good runner. In this class, he was third in yards created per carry, second missed tackles forced per carry. But yeah, I mean, excellent pass protector, like almost had a perfect score in pass protection execution rate. You know, in this class, you know, I think he probably was underutilized as a pass catcher, but like every time he got into one-on-one situations in the open field against linebackers, like he was getting past that guy. He was so elusive. You know, Texas kind of, you know, they ran a lot of screens and he wasn't really running like, you know, a full route tree or, you know, running option routes by any means. But, you know, if I always look at it as like, what can you do with the ball in your hands in a one-on-one situation? And if you can make that guy miss like Rashad White can, you know, I think Dave Canales is going to use him kind of in that Rashad White role. And, you know, maybe there's a pathway here where like Brooks only scores 6 touchdowns, but he catches, like you said, 50, 60 balls. And, you know, we're looking at him as like a high end RB2.
I mean, that's a win. I think I like him more for Dynasty than I do where he's going in best ball right now. Like in best ball, I like some of the guys like Chase Brown and Zach Moss, actually both the Bengals guys. I actually like Benson more than Brooks in best ball as well. Just because I expect the Cardinals to score so many more points. Like what is the Panthers team total in week 17 this year going to be? Like 17 and a half or something. The Cardinals might like routinely have 24 and a half point team totals if things go that way. The dynasty concerns for Benson would be, I mean, no one questions that Brooks profiles as a lead back. He's got the right size. He's got the right speed. He, you know, started out like being like a real workhorse for Texas before he hurt his knee. Benson never led, you know, never was not a timeshare back in college and now is drafted by a team that clearly plans on using him in timeshare for at least 1 year. Do you think he is going to be able to shoulder that load? I mean, does he profile as a guy who can handle 18 touches a game?
I think some of that is just like Mike Norvell, Florida State's coach. Like you look back at even his time at, you know, in Memphis when he was coaching there, like he always had a running back rotation just to keep those guys fresh. So for me, I'm not really too concerned about that. You know, obviously the contingent upside with Benson is insane because, you know, James Conner, like I've been banging the drum for James Conner in round eight for like 3 straight years. This will be the first year I'm not doing it. You know, Conner's just so due for 3-4 missed games every year. And there's a chance, you know, when he misses those games, Benson just like goes nuts and never, you know, Conner just never gets the job back. So I'm with you. I've got Benson like 15, 20 spots ahead of Conner in my best ball rankings. I'm stunned that I have the ADPs basically flipped. Like Conner goes like in the 80s and 90s. You know, Benson goes like 101 to like 110-ish range. I have them flipped in my ranks. Like I'm stunned that Conner is still going ahead of Benson.
Same.
Just because of the downside risk. And then, you know, Benson's a really good receiver, man. Like there's a chance here that Benson week one is like the 6, 7, 8 kind of carry, you know, change of pace back, and then he gets all the receiving work. And that just like completely cucks Conner's upside as, you know, basically only a goal line back.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, you are 100% correct. That is, I think that's probably their plan organizationally. And then it's like Benson is just so explosive. Like he, especially for like best ball stuff, I mean, he might give you a couple spike weeks early, even in kind of like Breece Hall, where Breece was not 100% the starter right away, but he was just so explosive from the get-go that he was giving you some spike weeks even in that shared role. So we're about to what is basically the huge tier break, which is after Nix goes, after Ladd goes, after the two running back, and I guess Keon Coleman. Let's do Keon Coleman real quick. I'm just like, I'm not into him. I don't love it. I didn't super love his prospect profile. I did not really think he was a good fit for Josh Allen, which is why before the draft, I was like, I just have a bad feeling he's going to Buffalo. And I don't know why, because I don't think these two players are made for each other. But you want to talk about a guy who's going to be giving every chance to succeed. His competition is not that dissimilar from McConkey's, right? Samuel, Shakir, Knox, Kincaid. Like, who is the target stealer if Coleman can play? There is not one.
Yeah, that's the thing. You know, everybody's kind of split on Coleman just because obviously no one really loved him as a prospect, and he went to the combine and kind of stunk. And obviously analytically, he's not a great prospect, you know, to land in just the absolute perfect spot. Like, you know, Shakir and Samuel are just, you know, I think just slot players basically. You know, then Kincaid's a middle of the field guy too. So the opportunity's there. I will say Coleman was really good at scoring touchdowns. Like that matters, you know, 19 touchdowns on 175 targets in just 24 games in his last two seasons. So, you know, that's definitely, you know, kind of the, I guess, skeleton key maybe for Coleman is just the touchdown upside with him is sick. Like maybe he's not the most efficient player in fantasy. Maybe he's not ever going to catch like, you know, 80, 90 balls. But if, you know, we can get 65, you know, 900 and upwards, like 8, 9 touchdowns, like that's going to play, you know, as a wide receiver 3-4 as a rookie.
I guess that's, I mean, there's not a touchdown score really in this offense now. Nope. If you like Kincaid didn't really do that at Utah, didn't do that at, I mean, Knox had more end zone targets than he did last season. So I suppose that is open for him. It feels like maybe he can do that at an NFL level, but I don't know if this is a guy who can catch 88 passes a season. Like, I just don't know if that's his skill set.
Yeah, and that's the thing. And I don't know. So the Bills obviously just have this like massive hole with Diggs and Davis on the outside. When I was watching Coleman, you know, just pre-draft and then just looking, you know, through the numbers and stuff, like I was thinking, man, that he'd be like perfect in like a big slot role. Remember how Brandon Marshall kind of played that big slot role for a little bit late in his career? Like in terms of body type and like the way these two guys are, like, I think he would be ideal in kind of one of these roles where he's playing like 35, 40% of his routes out of the slot. I don't know if that's going to happen in this offense. Like they just desperately need to play him on the outside. And
yeah,
that is a little bit of a concern. Like the separation skills weren't great. And if he's going to be outside, like, you know, on an island 80% of the time, yeah, I'm with you. There's definitely some downside risk, but the upside is really sick. I mean, he's getting steamed now, Davis. Like he was getting, I think when BBM dropped, he was in the 100s.
I saw him go in the 7th yesterday.
Yeah, bro. He's getting pushed into the 8th.
I mean, just for me, I just won't. I mean, I would literally rather have 40% like Tyler Lockett in the 9th round than just be taking a bunch of Keon Coleman. Cause I'm also not really drafting. I have Allen ranked after ADP. So I'm not going to need to, like, not saying I'm not trying to go in being like, oh, I don't want any Josh Allen. That's not, I just won't probably structurally have that much. So what am I really hoping for with Keelan Coleman?
Yeah. Is that because just, I mean, quarterback is, in my opinion, really deep. I've kind of been bumping down Allen and Hurts too in my best ball rankings. Are you just, is it the depth? Is it something else with Allen?
I have Hurts over him.
Okay.
Because his pass catchers are better. It's just, it's his, yeah. his, like, That's everyone's fair. So down on the Eagles because they, you know, lost a home playoff game to Baker Mayfield and the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. But like that, their season ended in such a shitty way. Like Hurts is injured. They play the six best teams in the NFL in a 7-week stretch. Like, it just was bad. And I don't believe that is like who any of those dudes are. And also, I have Mahomes higher than consensus too. So I'm doing a lot of, you know, 4-5 turn Mahomes worthy type. And I'm way ahead of ADP on worthy. And also, I mean, I expect Rice to be suspended 4 games, probably, maybe not even that. So I'm taking him at ADP. There just are different structural ways I'm building the teams right now.
No, I like that. By the way, while we're just sticking on Keelan Coleman real quick, I pulled it up. Last year, Gabe Davis and Stephon Diggs had 26 end zone targets. Nobody else on the team had more than 3. Knox had 3. Kincaid had 3. Trent Sherfield had 2. So, I mean, just massive, massive touchdown upside for Coleman if he is, in fact, you know, kind of the red zone shot play into the end zone kind of guy.
And that is the way you should be doing these rookie drafts. Like, I think people do kind of play it too safe, where it's like, yeah, if Keon Coleman is good, I mean, the ceiling to the amount of points he can score is so much higher just because of the offense he's in, where it's like, you know, what is the best case scenario for Xavier Leggett? Like, he's just not that good. Like, I don't care that he went 30 seconds. He doesn't profile that well. The offense kind of stinks. Like, what would have to happen for Xavier Leggett to see a huge value increase? I mean, I guess if he somehow duplicated Adam Thielen's target share from last year, which is not even really the type of player he is, how many touchdowns are going to be available? Now, that being said, Leggett is like, I just took Leggett at 301 in a draft. I mean, that is just like an eat your vegetables thing. Like, yeah, he was a first round wide receiver. You got to take him there, but I'm not into him.
Yeah, I think nobody is. I'm in a draft right now, and I just picked at 205. Knicks went right ahead of me. I want a Knicks. I took Jalen Wright, actually. I'm a little aggressive there on Jalen Wright. But yeah, I think he's now getting to a point, man, where like everybody's out on him. If you get him at 301, like that's a really nice deal, honestly. Like he might become a target of mine. If that's the case, just the profile is so bad. Like I did not expect to have any Xavier Leggett, but like, man, he's going in like the 130s, 140s in best ball. Like what you agree, right? Like he's a much better prospect straight up than Mingo. Like Mingo had massive, massive red flags, but I think Leggett is a better prospect overall than Mingo was.
I mean, his final season was just so much better than anything that Mingo ever did. I mean, I And anticipating again, just like Mingo got a lot of chances. They definitely they tried to make Mingo a thing. I think the same thing is going to happen with Leggett. It's just like, I mean, Young played so bad and just,
yeah.
I mean, it could really be. I think Scott tweeted this out the other day. Like receivers who had over a 25% market share of their offense, but under 13.5 fantasy points per game. Leggett could totally be on that list this next year, where it's like he gets every opportunity, but there just are not enough touchdowns there available.
Yeah, no, that's definitely fair. You know, I guess the bull case is, you know, Canales is an actually competent coach, and they're going to have some, you know, decent coaching around. But you know, Bryce's rookie season was very bust worthy, man. Sad to say.
This next range of running backs that we get into after Benson goes, we've got Corum, we've got Lloyd, we've got Wright. I guess it really is just those three. How do you have those guys ranked, and are any of them like a real priority for you?
Yeah, I have it Wright 3, Lloyd 4, and Corum 5. And then, like you said, there's just like a huge drop off, like RB6 to RB12. You could kind of honestly,
like, yeah, you could make a case for any of them.
You could. Exactly. But I do think this 5 is really pretty strong in the second round. Jalen Wright is a priority for me. The landing spot, first and foremost, was fantastic with Miami. like if there's three teams that Jalen Wright could have landed on, like, you know, Miami's probably the number one team in terms of how McDaniel will know how to use him. Obviously, Mickey Mouse offense with the Volunteers last year, but Jalen Wright was like super creative. 5.4 yards created per carry. That's 80th percentile all time since 2016. So one of the few, along with Marshawn Lloyd, who are just like really, really good, consistent creators. The doubt, you know, the concern with Wright is that like he didn't really run in a normal offense because, you know, the spread and all the bunch, you know, kind of stuff that they did to kind of spread out defenses. You know, Wright only saw eight or more defenders in the box on like less than 10% of his carries. And you know, Tennessee opened up a ton of, you know, yards blocked for him. But Miami's offense, as we know, with Devon Achane and Raheem Mostert, like those guys, you know, McDaniel did such a good job getting those guys to the edge on like the pin pull stuff and all their, you know, kind of funky fun, like zone toss stuff. Like Jalen Wright's going to fit right into that group. You know, obviously Achane is the one. He has the most upside, but you know, him staying healthy is a question mark. Raheem Mostert has had health concerns his entire career, and he keeps doing it. But you know, now he's in his 30s, well into his 30s. You know, the chance that one of these two guys goes down and then Wright, you know, kind of steps in and becomes a, you know, a really good piece to this offense, I think is pretty strong. Obviously, the downside is that, you know, year one for your rookie drafts, you could be drafting a complete zero. Like he could be, you know, well behind Achane and Mostert. And, you know, you could make the same case for Lloyd and Corum too behind their starters, but I'm just drafting one for this, you know, I think he's a great player, and two, right, this offensive environment is really sick.
And it's definitely a matter of what where your team is at. Like maybe you have the 211 and you've got this great team, but you're like, you've got Christian McCaffrey, you've got two strong quarterbacks, you've got one of Jefferson, Chase, Lamb, whatever, but you've been starting like, I don't know, it used to be Nyheim Hines. Who's the PPR scam running back these days? I don't
there's
know.
There's not many. It used to be Theo Riddick and Nyheim Hines. We don't have the, you know, teams are finally figuring out.
Yeah, there used to be a lot of, there were more PPR. Jaleel McLaughlin will be a good PPR scam this year. So okay, maybe you've got McLaughlin as your, and you're like, you know what? Actually, I just am going to take Marshawn Lloyd and he's going to score six times this year, and I'll probably win the weeks where he scores, and then the rest of the weeks we'll figure it out after that. I agree with you that Wright is probably the best combination of skill and fit. The other thing is, I mean, do you want to look at some hindsight analysis where we could feel really dumb would be if Blake Corum is just like the starting running back for the Rams in week one.
Oh,
like
God, I know.
I mean, they draft Blake Corum and then McVay goes to the podium and he's like, yeah, he's just exactly like Kyren Williams. Like it's just like Kyren Williams, but like a new version of him.
Yeah. Well, he's Kyren Williams in the sense that their size and I think their creative ability are very similar, but you know, Corum is not the receiver that Kyren Williams was coming out. I went back through some of my data because I'm finishing up a yards created article, but you know, I was looking at some of Kyren's receiving data and then his pass protection data coming out.
He was really good at Notre Dame.
He was really good, man. So like there's a chance that Corum is like the 1B runner and then Kyren ends up being the receiving back and these guys kind of split. I have Kyren like way lower in my rankings. Pains me to say it
because
Kyren was my guy. Kyren was my guy last year. I loved Kyren late, but Corum is just good enough and he's like already a veteran NFL running back, you know. I think there's a real chance Kyren gets cucked a little bit.
I mean, it's like who knows what is living inside of Sean McVay's mind right now. Like Sean McVay, is he committed to it? Does he like to have a workhorse? It's like, you know, I think ultimately McVay probably does prefer to have a workhorse, but he's not an idiot. So when his backfield was like Bronny Rivers and Cam Akers and Daryl Henderson, and like he was chopping and changing these guys around, maybe Kyren plays on passing downs. But the issue is when it was just Kyren and they didn't have Blake Corum on the team, there was like no real downside of his usage changing. Now, we said this on Ship Chasing yesterday, he has legendary downside now, where maybe your second round pick comes into the season and is just like the backup to Blake Corum. And like, maybe that's only 3% possible, but it's definitely higher than zero. And it was zero a month ago, you know?
Yeah. So, yeah, when you're competing against Ronnie Rivers, man, like, you know, you're probably going to play every snap. And that's, I mean, by XFP, by snap share, like, you look at any, you know, route share, like, any role Kyren had last year, he was number two behind McCaffrey. And, like, that is not going to happen again this year. You know, I think the route share and the receiving stuff can stick. But even if, you know, you look at his role at the end of last year, he was not getting a ton of targets. They really just kind of used him in this, like, you know, heavy, heavy workhorse role. That's not going to happen again. So to me, Kyren's biggest upside remains the receiving role, which wasn't great last year anyway. He only had 48 targets across, you know, 12, 13 games.
Yes. Yeah, I am. I'm with you on that. Okay, who else? Well, where do you take Penix? I guess this is what I would say. I'm only taking Penix on shitty tanking teams. If I have a good team, if I have a team that can win, I'm so uninterested in dealing with any of that. But on a shitty tanking team, it's such a good bet to make. You're like, oh, the quarterback who just went eighth overall, he's got all these weapons. Maybe Kirk Cousins' Achilles is dust, but I'm taking all these running backs we just mentioned over him, which just means I'll never get him on a good team.
Yeah, I'm with you. He's the perfect like tank and just let him sit on your bench probably for all this year. You know, I have no clue if Penix is good. I know that the Raiders wanted to possibly move up and get him. I know the Saints were in on him. And the NFL was a lot higher on Penix than the media was. That being said, I mean, Penix did, of those teams, Penix landed in the best spot possible. I mean, Drake London and Kyle Pitts are, you know, great, obviously 1-2, and offensive line is okay. So if he does have to start, I think Penix can be like a pretty solid streamer this year if Cousins gets hurt again or is, you know, ineffective. But yeah, pretty much you're banking on a zero, you know, this season with Penix. I'm with you. I think he's like my 209, 210 right now. And honestly, yeah, I can make a case for a few of the receivers ahead of him, even in that range.
Yeah. I mean, this is the range of rookie drafts. Like once we get past those running backs, Leggett, Penix, Nix, and then we get into the Roman Wilson, Jalen Polk, Devontae Walker, Javon Baker, Troy Franklin, that's when it starts to just be like total personal preference. Like I do not care if you take Javon Baker ahead of Jalen Polk. I know Polk was the 37th pick in the draft or whatever, but it's like the margins are so thin. The average third round rookie pick like literally never starts for you. You're cutting them before they ever, you know, see the light of day. I actually, my favorite third round rookie pick is a running back we haven't mentioned yet, Ray Davis.
Nice.
Ray Davis is like 29 years old already. he's like 2 years older than Breece Hall. I think there's a pretty good chance he just like week one is just like getting 9 carries and getting the goal line stuff for Buffalo. Like high chance of that.
Yeah, I love that you said that because I have him at 6 right now. I've got, you know, the top 5 we just talked through, and then I've got Davis at 6. It just seems like the Bills are hell-bent on running the ball. You know,
yeah,
you look at their splits last year after they fired Ken Dorsey. They were the third most run-heavy team on first downs last season. So, you know, Ray right there already has like a, you know, decent contingent upside if James Cook were to miss time. And then, like you mentioned, like what if he's just their goal line back week one? You know, that's what they wanted Damien Harris to be last year.
Yeah.
That's what they made Latavius Murray to be last year.
Latavius, you know? Murray, oldest running back in the NFL they were playing.
Well, now they have the oldest rookie running back of all time, and he's going to play. I'm with you. I think Ray Davis is a really, really strong third-round pick on teams where you're looking for RB2 help, kind of in that outline you mentioned. Like, you've got Christian McCaffrey. You've got, like, one of these locked-in RB1s you feel great about. You know, there's a chance that Ray is like an actually usable RB2. James Cook is somebody I keep sliding down my rankings. It pains me to say it because I think he's such a sick player and the efficiency is so sick. Like, I thought he could be like a Kamara Eckler type player, but you know, Kamara and Eckler got goal line carries, and I don't think the Bills are ever really going to give him goal line carries with, you know, Josh there and, you know, now Ray Davis.
Correct. Yes. Yeah. You're very right about that. All right, now we're in real dart throw range. Kamani Vidal, you know, I guess it's a real what do you win when you win with Kamani Vidal, and you win a lot. Jermaine Burton is, I mean, if Jermaine Burton can play, which people smarter than me say that he can, you know, transfer. His coaches don't have that much nice to say about him. You have the great anonymous scout, quotes like, oh, if he wasn't such an asshole, he'd be a first round pick. I mean, he landed in a spot where T. Higgins is gone after this year. There are a lot of targets and a really good offense for him. There are targets for him even as a rookie with no tight end there and Tyler Boyd gone. I mean, it's pretty good for Burton if he can play.
Burton and Malachi Corley are kind of my guys in this third round-ish range. Corley probably goes a little ahead. But Burton, man, our guy Brett Whitefield, who put together our prospect guide this year, he called him the best field stretcher in the class. 20-yard average depth of target, outside on like nearly 80% of his snaps, maybe a little bit more. The big question, obviously, year one is like how much he plays. I'm not sure what they're going to do, right? Like they have Chase can play in the slot, obviously. But Burton might be a part-time player year one. But if they do let T. Higgins walk, and we're talking about Chase and Burton in terms of their skill sets meshing, it's like perfect. Burton takes the lid off. Chase is, he can win everywhere. Getting a true lid lifter for this offense is, beyond just T. Higgins, who's more of, the contested catch kind of big play, clasher type. Burton actually has some deep speed. So it's a really sick fit. I just don't know how much he's going to play year one. The thing I like about Malachi Corley is I think people are completely underrating his opportunity. Like
oh, Mike yeah. Williams, I skipped Corley. Corley is like a second round pick for me.
Yeah. We should have talked Corley there because I've got him pretty firmly ahead of Penix as well in that pocket. But yeah, Corley's opportunity. Mike Williams is 30 and just coming off a popped ACL. Maybe there's a chance Corley can play on the outside, but he's not going to have to. Week one, he'll play firmly in the slot, and they'll just let him do what he does best. I like Corley a lot more, I think, than most people do.
Yeah, I am. I mean, the opportunity's insane. He's pretty good. We've seen Rodgers succeed with these kind of bigger, lower to the ground guys, yard after catch guys before. They clearly tried to institute it in their offense last season with Hardman. Hardman showed up, didn't care, it's like, give me back to Kansas City. Then they had Xavier Gibson do it with in the Hackett offense. Now, I mean, I don't know, Hackett offense, what does that even mean? But yeah, the opportunity after Garrett Wilson, it's like, who is going to demand targets? Like, sure, Breece is going to get 90 targets. Okay. Then who?
Tyler Conklin. Tyler Conklin will get 87 targets for what, the fifth straight year or fourth straight year?
Is Mike, like, what can Mike Williams do? And like, I would bet right now Corley gets more targets than Mike Williams. Like, straight up.
He likely will. I think Williams will outscore him just because the touchdown upside if they all play 16 games. But like, that's the other thing with Mike Williams is, he's just never been able to put a full season together. Corley's opportunity is really sick, man. He's become one of my favorite best ball targets right now.
Yes. Yeah. I 100% agree with that. Let's see who else is okay. Let's get out of here on this. Your favorite fourth round rookie pick right now is who?
Favorite fourth round rookie pick. If I'm looking at receiver, it's Luke McCaffrey.
Love it.
Yeah, Luke McCaffrey, man, out of Rice. Opportunity's really sick. Obviously, Jahan Dotson failed last year and his opportunity. But, McCaffrey, again, it's subdivision, group of five, but, 2.1 yards per route run, pretty solid. Really sure hands, the opportunity for him to start in the slot is clearly there week one with Curtis Samuel gone. And then, like I mentioned, like maybe Jahan Dotson, like really, really stinks and McCaffrey can be the number two target on the team. So McCaffrey on wide receiver heavy teams where I'm looking at, wide receivers, late, Ray Davis is going to get pushed into the third. I think Bucky Irving will get pushed into the third. I'm not sure if Tyrone, Where have you seen Tyrone Tracy go?
Anywhere. He can go anywhere from the 308 to undrafted. Yeah. I mean, that is what fourth round rookie picks are made for. All like right. Weird, positional. He converted from wide receiver. Yeah. Like you're hoping he's the running back too, but if not, you're hoping he makes the team as a returner. Like it's all like that is like what fourth round rookie picks are made for.
Well, I'm in three rookie drafts right now and we're all stuck like in the middle of the second round. I've been excited to see where Tracy goes because I'm I'm probably just going to take him in the fourth because, like you said, like I could make a case for him at RB6 at, you know, over Ray Davis. I really could. Like maybe Devin Singletary stinks and like Tracy has an out as a receiver. And he was also like super creative and, you know, really elusive too. But then, you know, the downside is he's 25. He was a 6-year college player. You know, like he could flame out quickly. But Tracy is like the ultimate home run swing, like you said, in the fourth round. So he's my guy running back. And then I like McCaffrey a lot in fourth round.
I like him a lot. On shitty teams, you should not leave a draft without Spencer Rattler. You like, if you have a team that is tanking, like just please do me a favor and make sure that you have Spencer Rattler. There's no excuse. Like the fact that Rattler was, what'd he go, like pick 185 or something to the Saints? Like, I mean, Spencer Rattler is starting a minimum of 3 games this year for the Saints, if not more. Like Derek Carr is going to have his yearly shoulder injury. And I know it's a long time ago, but Spencer Rattler in 2020 was expected to be the number one overall pick in the draft. And he was horrible at Oklahoma. He got benched. He had to transfer to South Carolina, all this stuff. Like, I'm not saying he's going to be the next great quarterback, but if you put Bo Nix and Spencer Rattler in an abandoned stadium and you just watch the two throw, you'd be like, yeah, Rattler good, Nix not good. Like, Rattler's way better than that guy.
Well, it's funny you said that, because I think it was Jeremy Fowler. I was reading one of his articles this morning, and he was basically saying that the NFL had Nix and Rattler really close. You know, they obviously, it just turned out, you know, the Raiders didn't go after a quarterback. Basically, you know, Broncos and Falcons kind of got their guys early. But I think Rattler would have gone a lot earlier if the Broncos didn't draft Nix or the Falcons didn't draft Penix, because one of those teams would have gotten him. In our league, we're talking about DFB, Davis. I flipped you my 2025 third for the 406 in our draft back whenever it was in March or whenever, maybe February. Yeah, we finished in April, but I took Rattler at 406 for that same reason. Like, I think he's going to go. I thought he'd go maybe third round. Fifth round was definitely a little bit of a surprise for him, but yeah, man, I just, same thing. I thought he'd get a real chance on a team that's kind of like the Saints, like, or the Raiders, that just don't really have a long-term solution. And maybe they take a, you know, home run swing. You know, Rattler is an awesome, like you said, an awesome fourth round pick for teams where you've got like Kirk Cousins and nothing as your QB2, take Rattler.
Yes. Yes. Like, oh, like that is like, or if you only have, it's even it better if you only have two olds. So like, let's say, or say you have one of the good guys, say you have Kyler Murray and I don't know, a real borderline guy. This used to be Derek Carr, but now they're on the same team, so it doesn't work. The Geno Smith.
Baker Mayfield? Baker.
Yeah. Yes.
On this team.
Take Spencer Rattler. Take Spencer Rattler and enjoy. I mean, it's not like he's ever going to turn into a real asset for you, but it's just like you're just going to get some quarterback instead of him.
There's a 5% chance, man, that like Carr stinks. Like you said, maybe Rattler starts 8 or 9 games, and then we're talking about, you know, the Saints going into next year with Rattler, and then, you know, maybe another veteran guy. And, you know, there's a chance here for sure. I mean, Rattler, obviously his stock completely fell off the face of the earth, but like you were saying, you know, 3-4 years ago, I mean, he was like almost a shoe-in number one pick. So obviously
you play,
huge fall
if you play
grace,
Debbie leagues, if you play Debbie leagues, you are, you are old enough to remember Spencer Rattler being 101 in Debbie stuff. Like that's the type of dude we're dealing with here. I back up Tyrone Tracy. I think he's an extremely good one. Didn't mention Ben Sinnott. I mean, he's more like a second round pick in these tight end premium leagues. I'm targeting him pretty aggressively. And I'll give a super deep one, Cody Schrader. So some of my leagues go 5 and 6 rounds as well. Cody Schrader is going to make the 49ers roster over Isaac Guerrero. I already know it. I already know that Guerrero is going to be the next Joe Williams, and that Cody Schrader is going to come in and Tyrion Davis Price is actually already gone. He's on the Eagles.
Yeah, he's gone.
So it's going to happen. All right, Graham, let's get out of here. Tell the people how they can sign up for Fantasy Points and what they will get with that subscription this year.
Yes, sir. Yeah, fantasypoints.com. We're covering everything from your rookie drafts to best ball to season long. You can get in today for $60 at our standard subscription price. That'll give you basically all the articles on the site. But we also have an incredible data suite, Fantasy Points data, this season. Basically, the last 3 years of charted data from our charting team, led by Brett Whitefield and Chris Wecht. Basically, it's PFF, but in Excel form. We've got insane formulas and filters that you can go through. That is $200 this year for this season. You're definitely going to want it for DFS and for betting and for researching your best ball teams. That's where that's at. I'm at Graham Barfield on Twitter. Davis, this was it's always good to catch up with you yearly, man. This is a great time.
Yeah, very, very, very glad that you were able to create some time. Everyone, make sure that you are following Graham. Make sure you're checking out Yards Created and all the cool stuff that they have there at Fantasy Points. And I'll be back later this week.